In this special issue of the Secret Identity Podcast, I'm going to be spending some time with my good friend Anthony Johnston today, talking about the brand new series that's coming from him and Chris Mitten in November called Umbral.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know.
It's fun though, isn't it?
A family full of midgets is not considered kids! That's a game!
Bond. James Bond.
I am your father.
And welcome everybody to a very special episode of Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry, and today I am without the Matt Man because today's episode is a bit of a departure. Although, if you listen to the show for any length of time, then it's not that unfamiliar to you. Sometimes we end up doing epically long interviews that end up being an episode in and of themselves. And the gentleman that I'm going to be talking to today is someone who that has happened with quite a few times because we tend to get into epically long conversations, and that's my good friend Anthony Johnston. He is the creator of Wasteland. He has written for many video games, including the very popular Dead Space series. And in this episode, we are going to be talking about the brand new series that he is launching with Chris Mitten called Umbral. It's a dark fantasy series. It's going to be launching in November. And so the focus of this episode is to talk about that series, what it was like working with Chris Mitten again, and sort of the inspiration behind the series. And we cover all the bases here, and we get into talking about even the marketing of that series as well. So you can check the show notes for this episode to get links to the umbral.tumblr.com, which is the official web page or landing page right now for the series. You can download the pre-order form from there as well. You can jump onto the Twitter account from there, and you can keep up with all the news that's going on with the series. And if you enjoyed this interview and you want to hear even more of Anthony and I talking about sort of writing in general, you can check out the next episode of the C. Brian Wright podcast, which will be airing this Wednesday, where we get into a lot of other topics as well. So I'm going to take a break. We will come back with that interview, and then I'll be back after that interview to wrap up.
Now, just because you buy your books online doesn't mean you have to sacrifice the comic store experience. Now, many of us don't live close enough to a shop to call our own, and that's where DCBS can help you. Not only do they offer incredible discounts, but Discount Comic Book Service has the giveaways like Free Comic Book Day and Power Rings. And in the slightest chance that you have a problem with your order, DCBS is fast to make sure you're satisfied and very happy. So join the many Secret Identity listeners who have made the switch by going to www.dcbservice.com and tell them you heard it here at Secret Identity.
And this is Brian here, and for the first time in about, almost a year, I am talking to my good friend Anthony Johnston. How are you today, sir?
I'm very good, thank you. And yes, it is almost exactly a year because it was at New York Comic Con that we last spoke.
Yeah, and we're going to talk in a few minutes about what we were speaking about at New York Comic Con, but I am very excited that you took time out of a Sunday, which is football day, and I know you're a huge football fan, even though it hasn't started yet today, to talk about the new project that you've been working on, which was announced at Image Expo this year, I think in August, correct?
It was kind of stealth announced at Image Expo, yeah.
Right, so it was kind of teased there, and now we're hearing much more about it as the launch of this new series has been coming closer and closer, and that is Umbral. So I am super excited to talk about that because when I read the sentence, a new dark fantasy from the creators of Wasteland, that's already a buy for me, without even reading any further, you know, within the teaser. But rather, I'm not going to do it justice. I want to throw it over to you. Can you just give us sort of the pitch for Umbral?
Sure. I mean, that is exactly the reaction that we were hoping for. That's why we're using that, you know, I admit, as one of the selling points, is that we want people who liked the work that Chris and I did on Wasteland to read Umbral. So Umbral is a new dark fantasy series by me and Chris Mitten. It is the story of Rascal, a young thief who breaks into the royal palace to steal a priceless jewel, but she ends up witnessing the horrific murder of the king and queen in a dark magic ritual. And she soon discovers that she has stumbled upon a stealth invasion by the Umbral, shadow creatures that everyone thought were just a legend. But they are, in fact, very real, very dangerous, and now Rascal holds the key to stopping them.
Which, I mean, if anybody's listening to this and that doesn't get you excited right now, I don't know what else will, because that, to me, just brings up so many great horror
nods, just the dark fantasy piece that you talked about in the beginning, and just the fact that it's such a departure from the work that you and Chris Mitten have done on Wasteland. You know, you've sort of had this post-apocalyptic, very sort of Mad Max in some ways, but just kind of futuristic project that's been going on for 47 issues now, and now we're getting this new, almost at the other end of the spectrum, dark fantasy piece. How did this come together with the two of you?
Well, yes, as you say, Chris and I worked together for quite some time on Wasteland. Chris departed after issue 28 of Wasteland, but we stayed in touch, we stayed good friends. The fact is that we share a lot of opinions about comics and how comics should be made, and we also share a lot of tastes. We're both, here's a clue, we're both very, very big fans, for example, of the Dark Crystal movie. And I just kind of, this was would have been last year, early last year, I just kind of got the urge to make something new specifically with Chris, because it had been a while since we worked together. And honestly, because he's obviously been doing things like Criminal Macabre and a bit of Batman work, and I wasn't sure whether he would be up for it, but I, you know, sort of tentatively put forward the idea and discovered that, in fact, the urge was mutual, and he'd been thinking exactly the same thing. So then we had to talk about, okay, well, what are we going to do? You know, what would we like to do? And on Wasteland, I mean, Wasteland plays into both of our sensibilities very much, but Wasteland, nevertheless, is very much about Chris drawing what I wanted to see. You know, as you know, Wasteland right. was a story that I'd been working on for like 15 years. Chris just happened to be the perfect artist to help me create it, but it was very much my thing. And, you know, Chris knew that and he was fine with it. But I wanted this time, because we're both quite different creators now to when we did Wasteland, and, you know, we're both more experienced within the industry, blah, blah, blah. So this time, basically, I wanted, instead of Chris drawing what I wanted to see, I wanted to write what Chris wanted to draw, if that makes sense to you.
Absolutely.
So that's what Umbral is. That's why we settled on dark fantasy, because we both love that genre. And I'm very specifically, I've created a world around some of the things that Chris loves to draw, which, as you know, if you know, being familiar with his work, basically, we've mashed two of our obsessions together for this book. I love building huge, elaborate fantasy worlds. And Chris loves drawing weird, grotesque things that lurk in the shadows. And that's Umbral in a nutshell.
Which, for me, when I see even the teaser images that you've put out so far, it speaks to two parts of me that are sort of a perfect match. One is the Lovecraftian things in the shadows horror fan, and the other one is the kid who grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons and still has a lot of love for that type of world building today. And I think, those two things together spoke to me when I saw the trailer images that you guys have put out. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes, too, to the Tumblr page and to the preview strip that you guys have put out so far. But you mentioned Dark Crystal, and that's so funny because I think even the color palette of the teaser so far evokes that Dark Crystal, that Labyrinth. Those are sort of dark fantasy movies that I grew up with when I was a kid, and I think you have hit that tone even with what you've shown so far. So it's clear that those influencers are there.
I certainly hope so, yeah. I mean, you know, we're not, it's not like we're trying to, I mean, Umbral is very much not for children.
Right.
Let me just make that quite clear. It is not a book for children, but that kind of, yeah, we are trying to evoke that kind of feeling of the weird, the non-standard fantasy. I mean, I love swords and sorcery, and I love what you might call standard D&D or standard Tolkien fantasy, but that's not what we wanted to do. There's so much of that around, and frankly, you know, people like, God knows, George Martin and what have you do it so much better than I could. So instead we thought, well, let's do the things that we do best together, and that is, as I say, you know, Chris's fantastic grotesque creature designs and the kind of world building in the slightly skewed manner that I tend to do it. So that's, yeah, that's the kind of the strange, weird fantasy feeling that we're trying to get across.
Well, and I don't think dark fantasy is really a genre that's being spoken to all that much now. Like you mentioned, again, Dark Crystal, and it's hard to think about now what would be the grown-up version of that? What would be the version of that that I would want to come and visit as an adult now? And there is tons of fantasy out there, a couple of which sort of you just mentioned, but not a lot that are in this vein. So it's such a sort of refreshing vision to come out right now, and it kind of reminds people that, hey, there's not a lot out here like this right now. So that's exciting.
Well, certainly not in comics. I mean, there's not a lot in film either, but you do have people like Guillermo del Toro making, you know, some of his strange fantasy horror movies. But he does tend to, things like Devil's Backbone or... Mm-hmm. My mind's going. What was the name of the one with the girl? With the eyes in the hand. You know the one I mean.
Oh, well, Pan's Labyrinth.
Pan's Labyrinth, right.
Yep.
Those do tend to more on the side of horror.
Yes.
They are very weird dark fantasy, but they also have very, very strong horror elements. We have elements of horror in Umbral, but it's not a horror book. It is a fantasy book. Yeah, it is kind of... Nobody is doing anything quite like this at the moment, and certainly not in comics. Ironically, I think probably the closest thing to this in comics at the moment is Saga, which, of course, is science fiction, not fantasy. But in that kind of feel of, well, this is a really weird world where just about anything can happen, and there is, you know, magic and strange things and what have you, that's actually not that far off.
Well, and I think you hit on something very important right there, because Saga is a book that when you read it, you definitely feel like anything can happen, and you never know what's going to be around the next page. And that is a feeling that I don't see evoked as much in, certainly not in mainstream comics right now, but it's kind of hard to surprise comic book fans that have been reading comics for years and years and years. And so when a book like Saga comes along that's able to do that, I think that's great. And certainly with what you guys are trying to do with this, I think that's exactly what you want to shoot for people to not have any idea, for never to be on solid ground, not to know what's going to be lurking around that next page.
Exactly. That's exactly the sort of thing that we're trying to do. I mean, obviously, and tell a good story and everything at the same time. But yeah, we are very much trying to unsettle people, which is why, well, you've seen the first issue, so you know that we're taking a very kind of contemporary approach to how people behave and the sort of grammar and language that people use. And that's deliberate to ground the reader, to make the reader think, okay, well, this is familiar. I understand how the way these people talk to one another, but, you know, they hopefully won't be able to get a solid bearing on, yeah, the world and what's going to happen next. And is this character safe and so on and so forth.
Well, and like the character, you know, you're trying to get a grasp for what the heck is going on, and
exactly.
In the first issue, without having any spoilers whatsoever, what made me think of Wasteland and the first issue for Wasteland as well is one of the things that I loved about the first issue of that series is I closed the book, and there were so many questions that I had after closing that book that I immediately went back and started rereading it from the beginning. It's a first issue that... And if people haven't read it, you can go to Comixology right now and download the first issue of Wasteland for free, and it will speak for itself when you read it. But what I loved about that issue is even now, much farther along in the series, that first issue just begs to be revisited again and again. And I felt that way after checking out the first issue of Umbral, like, oh, I need to go back and read this again, and I probably missed a couple of things on the way to where the first chapter ends. And it's just, I love that because you're opening so many doors and asking so many questions with that first issue that, of course, people want to, you know, wait for the next installment, but it gets them thinking about the world that you've created.
That's exactly what we were going for. And believe me, if you think you have a lot of questions at the end of the first issue, just wait until, you know, issues 2 and 3. There's stuff in there that, you know, even as I was writing it, I was sort of chuckling to myself because I know, you know, there are questions there that people are going to be going, what the hell? And we're not going to answer them for at least another half dozen issues.
Which is great, because that's again, sort of the way that Wasteland kind of unfolded, where you get bits and pieces, but more questions come up. If you answer one question, you're asking 2 or 3 more every issue. And so it's just this, you know, trail of breadcrumbs that you're following through the story. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this at the top of the interview, but we are going to be talking for my other podcast, See Brian Wright, as well, and we're going to talk more about process, but there is a process question that I want to ask you now just because we're talking about first issues. So in creating the first issue of Umbral, and this was a question you had to answer when it came to Wasteland as well, how do you balance the struggle of wanting to introduce the world to people. And obviously you've put so much thought into this world, and there's so many things that you want to do with this world and show with this world, with the story that you need to tell in a first issue to get people to come back. Because the, for me, and again, I haven't written a ton for comics, but even just in first chapters of stories that I'm writing, my struggle is always that I want a world build so early on that sometimes that is almost threatening to take over my story. How do you deal with that when it comes to a first issue?
It is a fine balance that you have to strike, no question. My first issues, as I'm sure most people's first issues and first chapters and what have you, go through, you know, many different sort of drafts. But in terms of the plot, I don't actually go through that many drafts, because what I tend to do is I'll have a fairly good idea of how I want any given series or story to start. And then it's a question of, okay, well, what's a good chunk for a first chapter? And I'll tend to rough that out, and then I go back and look at it and think, okay, is there anything else that's really important that I want people to know about the world in this first chapter, issue, whatever, that I haven't put in there? And if so, can I tweak this somehow to fit it in? And if it's really important, if I've made a howler and missed out something really important, then sometimes I will just rip the whole thing to shreds and completely replot an issue to make sure that that stuff's in there. But I tend not to actually worry about it too much. This will sound rather pretentious, I think, but I like to rely on the characters to kind of do that for me, to do that job for me. I don't actually worry too much about, oh, I've got to get this information about the world into this story for the reader. I tend to think, well, if it's important, the characters will talk about it. And if they don't talk about it, then obviously it's not important right now. So, yeah, I don't tend to worry about it too much. I kind of let the story just tell itself. And the bits of world building generally come out in the way the characters speak and what they talk about. And I just let it sort of come out organically, I guess.
Well, I think that's certainly proven true with Wasteland, so I'm glad that that's not something that sort of weighs on you, because I think it's doubly tough when you're talking about a world that's unfamiliar to people. You know, it's different if you're, you know, with some of the Daredevil work that you've done, the city is sort of the city, and Hell's Kitchen is sort of Hell's Kitchen, and so there's not a ton of introduction to that world that you need to do for people. But with the worlds that you're creating, with Wasteland and with Umbral, there is so much to them that is unfamiliar to people.
Right, because in Daredevil, if I just have a location header that says the office, law offices of Nelson and Murdoch, that's all you need. And everybody knows, oh, well, I know exactly where that is. I know what it is. I know where we are. I know what's happening. Whereas in Umbral, if I say, oh, the back stairs of the Red Palace, readers go, well, hang on a minute. What's the Red Palace? Why does it have back stairs? Where is it? What is it on the coast? Is it in the mountains? Is it on a lake? Who knows? So, yes, it just by putting in little bits like that with no explanation, it immediately raises questions in the reader's mind. It has to, because, as you say, they're completely unfamiliar with the world. So there is, I mean, and some people may laugh at this, some people may not believe me. I don't try to deliberately confuse readers. I do actually try to make sure that, you know, if I introduce something like a palace, that I show them, this is a palace, and, you know, you shouldn't be confused. That's different to mystery. Obviously, I always try and create an aura of mystery, but I do try my hardest to make sure that readers aren't confused, because I think that's detrimental to the reading experience.
And I want to be really clear that I think in certainly in Wasteland, and from what I've seen of Umbral as well, it's not confusion, it is mystery. And I feel like a lot of times there are writers who are even afraid to be mysterious in their writing for fear of that being interpreted as confusing. And so a lot of times people play it very safe. And I love the fact that you are not afraid to be mysterious in the writing, because to me, that's one of the strongest points of Wasteland, is the mystery that drives that book. And I think with the first issue of Umbral, you again are showing a world that there are just so many mysteries to, that it's okay that you don't know everything right away, even though you know, there's a part of you as a reader that wants to know everything right away. So that's difficult to pull off, mystery.
It is, but to me, mystery is, you know, one of the most interesting parts of story. That's what drives a story for me. All of my favorite books, comics, movies, they're all driven by that kind of mystery. Even if it's, you know, even if it's just a Bond movie and the mystery is like, well, who's the villain and why on earth is he trying to blow the world up or something, you know, that kind of mystery is, to me, fairly essential to a good story. So it is something that I work at a lot, and it's something that I try to make sure all of my stories have, that feeling of mystery, because it's, I don't know, it just kind of makes sense to me. It's, you know, and I hope, obviously, that readers feel the same way, but I don't really know how to write a story that doesn't have mystery in it, to be honest. I'm not sure I could even if I tried.
I don't think we'd want you to, based on the stuff that we've read from you already. So to go back to Chris Mitten for a second, now, one of the things that people will notice even through the teaser images that they've seen that is different from what they might have experienced with Wasteland is color.
Oh, yes.
Color plays a big part in this series. Was that something from the very get-go that the two of you decided we're going color this time around, and you know, sort of how did you make that decision?
Yes, well, we always wanted to do this in color. There was no question about that. We weren't sure who it would be at first, and we weren't sure how exactly we would do it, you know, because when we started talking about this series, we had no idea where we were going to place it. We didn't know whether it would be, you know, with an online publisher even, or with Oni or with Image or, you know, whoever. We just had no idea. So we weren't sure exactly how we would go about that, but we were, yes, very definite that it would be color this time to bring out the best of Chris's sort of grotesquery, if you like. And we found John Rauch. I confess, entirely sure how to pronounce his last name. But I will continue saying Rauch. And he's brilliant. And I confess, I wasn't actually massively familiar with his work up until about a year ago, I think. And then I started to see his work in a few books, and I was like, wow, this guy can really color. This is really good. Very, you know, he clearly knows how to get atmosphere across with color. He knows how, when to sort of dial back the realism and go for mood, that sort of thing. And I really like that in a colorist. So, and Chris knows him a little as well. So when we were talking about colorists, John's name was one of the only names that Chris and I both put forward. And so, yeah, we, you know, we approached him, and luckily for us, he came on board.
And he really brings, as you mentioned, atmosphere to the book without taking anything away from what people expect from Chris's work. He has such a distinctive style. I can't even equate Chris's work to anybody else's out there. I think in that, again, I think that's one of the strongest things about his work, is he has such a unique style.
Absolutely.
That seeing that in color and seeing the atmosphere that those two things together bring to this book is really, it's really refreshing.
It is, and I'm really glad that John kind of took some of the notes that we had about color and wanting to make it feel otherworldly and really ran with them, because it would be very easy to take a book like this and go, okay, Vertigo Brown.
Right.
And you know what I mean by that. And I'm so glad that, to be honest, I kind of was thinking of it more or less in those, you know, in that aspect myself, because I just assumed that would be the kind of color palette that you'd expect for this sort of fantasy story. And then when John came back with his first color test, I was just blown away. I was like, this is, you know, it's not what I imagined, but it's better. You know, it's exactly what I wanted, even though I didn't know it.
Which is always the most exciting part about working with other creators, is when they bring back something that's even more than what you imagined in your head.
Exactly. And Chris does that all the time. In fact, I tweeted about that a while ago, which you may have seen. And if you're wondering, that tweet was specifically about Umbral. I think I'd just seen the first 10 or 12 pages of Pencils of Umbral issue 1 from Chris at that point, and it absolutely blew me away. And that was what, yeah, drove me to make exactly that statement, that, you know, there is an amazing feeling and a privilege, frankly, to work with people who take what you give them and then run with it and return to you something that is even better than you could possibly have imagined. And I have a pretty good imagination, you know.
As we've seen time and again.
Yeah, but Chris outdoes it every time, no matter how big I think, no matter how weird or strange I think I give it to Chris, and it comes back, and it's even bigger. It's even weirder. It's even stranger. And that's what I love working about him, and that's what I love about working with comic artists in general. But Chris, as I say, Chris and I are very in sync in that sort of sense, and he floors me every time.
You mentioned tweeting about this series, and it just brought up something for me. When I tell people stories of how we first met, and I look back to the beginnings of Wasteland and Secret Identity actually have a history together in that we had started in March of 2006, and you were, I think, the first interview that we actually did for Secret Identity. And back then, I remember telling people, like, wow, there's this guy who is already using podcasts as a great way to get the word out about his books, and he's really kind of grassroots marketing with that kind of stuff. We fast forward now to 2013, and I'm looking at the Tumblr page for Umbral. Umbral has its own Twitter account at this point. I've always sort of seen you as sort of a pioneer of that grassroots marketing, and now you continue to use all of the tools that are available to you. How big of a planning process is that? And are you amazed at how much it's changed the tools that you have available to get the word out about a book now?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But I'm always amazed. I've been online for many, many years. I literally got online about sort of, I think, about 6 months after the World Wide Web was invented. So I have seen all of these changes, and they always amaze me. You know, every time some kind of new amazing technology comes out, it blows me away. And yes, I always look at them and think, okay, you know, quite cynically, how can I use this to get the word out about my work? I'm actually a bit late to Tumblr. There are people who got there before me and who use it better than I do. Kelly Sue DeConnick being one fantastic example, and Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, especially with the Young Avengers stuff recently, use Tumblr much more effectively than I do. They seem to have a knack for it. But yeah, it is another outlet, another avenue. Twitter is something I have been on Twitter for a long time, almost not quite since the start, but not far after. And that's always been, again, great about getting the word out. And what's weird, actually, is seeing the rise and fall of these things, and speaking to other creators and finding out what works and what doesn't. You may remember, well, MySpace.
I was just going to say, there would have been an Umbral MySpace page 5 years ago.
Yes, there would have, yes. And Comic Space.
Oh, yeah, Comic Space. I remember that.
Yeah, and Facebook, obviously, still going. But, you know, the thing is that all of these things have peaks and troughs. MySpace, obviously, was huge for 6 months and then died. Comic Space was never massive, but it did have a brief burst of being very popular. Facebook used to be the big daddy. And then about a year ago, a lot of people that I talked to, and myself included, just started seeing Facebook be less and less effective, a complete drop-off in attachment, as they say, from Facebook. And then, of course, they introduced this whole thing where you have to pay for fans of your page to actually see all the messages
right.
that you post, at which point pretty much everybody I know in comics, myself included, went, up yours.
Which wasn't necessarily a bad thing, because Facebook at its heart is a social network that people, it's almost like we all need a mulligan from it. You know, everybody sort of started with Facebook, and your Facebook account became your work friends and your high school friends and everything else. And it was so muddied before people really wrapped their mind around what it was that it made it difficult to stand out. Especially if you were trying to market different sides of yourself or use it for different things, which is why I'm really interested in what Google Plus has yet to become, because it's sort of a do-over for people who, you know, felt like if they had Facebook to do all over again, they might do something differently. And so, but I don't even think we've seen the rise of Google Plus yet. I think it's still sort of lurking in the background.
Yeah, it's an odd one. I'm not convinced that Google Plus will ever hit that kind of critical mass, but obviously. Never bet against Google, so who knows?
Right.
But long story short, seeing the rise and fall of these things, like at the moment, I know of quite a few creators who, as far as they're concerned, Twitter is the only thing that moves the needle for them. You know, if they start tweeting heavily about a book, they see a definite response, and an according sort of uptick in order numbers. There are others for whom Twitter does very little, but for whom Tumblr is huge. So, yeah, I always find it very interesting to see what kind of is popular at the moment, where the readers are. Because, when you're doing PR, you've got to go where the people are.
Right.
And where they're looking for information on this stuff. And right now, yeah, Tumblr is one of the places where a lot of people have flocked and a lot of readers are looking for news about the comics they already read and comics they might want to read.
So as we kind of continue down the road with Umbral, one of the things that jumped out at me and that I still to this day think is so unique about Wasteland is the musical aspect of the world that you created for Wasteland. People can go to thebigwhite.com and they can – it's 9 tracks now, right? Correct? I know there's 10 listed there, but you have 9 live tracks for people to download for Wasteland?
I think, possibly. If that includes the reprise at the end, that sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was something that I loved, and I'm surprised that more people have not done for – especially worlds that they've created, is this sort of musical aspect of what is the soundtrack of that world. Is this something you've thought about with Umbral as well?
Funnily enough, I have no intentions of doing anything quite so large scale with Umbral. However, I was walking my dogs the other morning and suddenly a tune kind of popped into my head. And so there may well be an Umbral theme song at some point, but I am not intending to make an entire album's worth of music like I have done with Wasteland. I think, why don't more people do it? Well, for a start, you need to be able to compose music.
Sure.
You know, which not everybody can do, or not everybody is comfortable trying to do. And secondly, I mean, honestly, I have no idea whether the Wasteland soundtrack works from a sort of, you know, a cynical marketing sense, you know, whether it makes people feel more engaged about the series or whether it attracts new readers or anything like that. I suspect it probably doesn't. I do that because I love writing music, I love composing and making music, and Wasteland just felt like a series that needed a theme tune. So the Wasteland soundtrack is very much a labor of love. From a sort of purely cold business perspective, you know, it's not really... I don't think it necessarily gives a return on investment, as it were. There may well be an Umbral theme song, but I wouldn't necessarily expect any more than that.
Well, even with the theme song, that's exciting to me because I think everyone, I mentioned they can go and download the first issue of Wasteland right now. They should also go to thebigwhite.com and listen to, at the very least, the main Wasteland theme, because I do feel like that tune really... especially the part where Michael's sort of, you know, scrounging and scavenging and just the desolation, the intro to that theme song and the whole thing in general really captures the feel of that first issue of Wasteland. So I think it was very powerful, and it was one of those things that still sticks with me today. And as we've gone into this digital age of people being able to, whether through Comixology or through PDFs of books or whatever, being able to get these things electronically, it kind of saddens me that we don't have more of these soundtracks or at least theme songs for people to experience while they're reading, because a lot of the other stuff has come along in terms of the director's commentary. You see a lot of pages of script, you see a lot of sketches, you see a lot of interviews with the creative team. The musical piece or the audio piece in general really hasn't clicked. I mean, even with Marvel and their AR stuff, they do more of sort of a video podcast vignette kind of thing with some of their Marvel AR stuff, which is awesome. It's great. I don't think enough people actually consume that when they buy those books, but the audio aspect to me is something that still is relatively untapped, and so it's awesome that Wasteland has that, and I would love to hear an Umbral theme song.
You know, now you've got me wondering. I wonder, maybe I should talk to the guys at Comixology and see if it's possible to sort of have the song for each arc automatically download when somebody downloads that issue. I don't know.
That would certainly be worth checking out, because that would be fantastic. And I hope in the future there's actually some of that stuff that you can just, with the touch of a button, turn on within the, you know, as you're reading the first issue, do you want to hear the theme for this issue? And yes, and it'll stream right through or something like that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. But I have no idea whether it's possible.
Well, that's good. I just wanted to see if that was kicking around in your head, so I'm glad to hear that there's the seeds of an Umbral theme song out there.
Music is always kicking around in my head. It's my blessing and my curse.
So for folks that have listened to this interview now and are getting excited, they're going to go check out the teaser. When is the book coming out? What is the best way for them to pre-order it? Because I know you've put some stuff out there to help them do that.
Pre-ordering, the best thing to do is go to theumbral.com. and, all one word, theumbral.com. Follow the link to the order form, which is on that webpage, which is on Tumblr. And all the information is there. Basically, the order number, the, you know, sort of details. They can fill in an order form to give to their retailer if they'd rather do that. You know, if they're not familiar with pre-ordering. The first issue goes on sale November 13th, which is about a month after New York Comic Con, I believe. And the order code is, as I say, on this. I'm not going to bother reading it out now, but it's on that order form. It's also on the Tumblr homepage. And yeah, they just, anybody who is interested, just give, well, most retailers, you probably don't even need to give them the order number. Just tell them that you want to pre-order Umbral Issue 1 from Image, and they will know which book you mean, hopefully. But, you know, if you're a thorough sort of person like me, I tend to do this, then use the order code, give that to your retailer, and, yeah, you know, you will get the first issue on November 13th, and then, you know, every other issue a month or so after that.
And I don't think people realize how much of a help it is when someone walks into a brick-and-mortar store and says, I want you to pre-order this for me, whether they printed out the form online or whether they're coming in with the order code, because these retailers are ordering books a lot of times on buzz. They have their mainstreams that they order on a regular basis, but a lot of the ones that are not from the big two, when they're hearing people walk into the store and ask for it, they're already going to be ordering more for those shelves than they would have normally been. So that's huge.
Yes, absolutely. And I do actually explain this, all of this, on the Tumblr page for the pre-order form, in case people are unfamiliar with why comics creators are always constantly asking people to pre-order their books. And it's because stores are understandably cautious about new series because they do not know what to expect. They don't know for certain how many copies they'll sell, how many people will be interested, whether they can continue selling copies, you know, sort of on a long tail basis. So the more people who, you know, either phone them up or go into the store and say, or even email them and say, I want this book, I'm interested in this book, can you please order a copy for me? That's, you know, the more people do that, the more the retailer thinks, okay, clearly this book has got people's interest, maybe I should order a few extra copies and try and, you know, sell it to, you know, the people who are just browsing the store or whatever. So yeah, it's absolutely huge. You cannot overemphasize the importance of pre-orders in the comic market as it stands today. Now, digital readers, obviously, you can't pre-order most titles. You can actually pre-order a few, I found out the other day, but most titles you can't. However, of course, you don't really need to because there's no scarcity. So if you're a digital reader, the best thing you can do is on November 13th, when the book comes out, when issue one comes out, go to Comixology or Image themselves or wherever you get your digital comics from and subscribe to the series if your preferred digital service offers that facility. Because again, it shows interest. It means that they think, oh, okay, you know, if a lot of people subscribe to a series, then Comixology or whoever, look, they see those numbers and they think, oh, a lot of people subscribing to this. And so they might give it more prominence on their homepage. They may push it with a sale. You know, all these things help. They persuade retailers to think, okay, people are interested in this book. Maybe I should pay it a bit more attention. Maybe I should help sell it a bit more. And that's all translates into, you know, greater success for us as creators and allows us to continue making the book.
Another thing I can't stress enough, too, is if you are a user of social media and it's Comic Book Wednesday and you're picking up a new book that's just debuting, it takes you literally less than a minute to put together a tweet that says, hey, I picked up this book today and it's great. Or, hey, don't forget this book comes out today. People have no problem linking to ridiculous YouTube videos or whatever the gossip headlines are of the day. When you like something and you want to support the creative team on something, if you use social media, it is so little effort to put out the word about something, but it can have such a tremendous impact that people forget that a lot of times. And it's really important to, number one, if the creators are out there, let them know that you actually enjoyed what it was that they created. But number two, help spread the word about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge return, as you say, for a very small amount of effort. And we do genuinely appreciate it. That's the thing is, you know, we as creators really, we appreciate people buying and reading the books, obviously, but we really appreciate people helping to spread the word about the book. because, you know, we do as much of it as we can ourselves, but we're not everywhere and we don't know everyone. So, yeah, if you are enjoying a book, tell people, tell your friends, tell other people in the comic store, you know, recommend it to other people, because that can, you know, translate into, if everybody does that, and it translates into, I don't know, say 1,000 extra sales every month for a book across the whole US or something. That's huge. You know, for an indie book, that's a large amount of extra copies. So you really can make a difference. And more than that, as I say, we do just really appreciate it because we are making these books for people to read. So when we hear that people are enjoying reading them, it warms the cockles of our heart.
Well, and so for all the Secret Identity listeners out there, you now have some homework. The first thing that you need to do is you need to go and check out Umbral. You need to check out the Tumblr, which I'll put links to in the show notes. There is a Twitter account as well. And then go over to Comixology and download the first issue of Wasteland. Check out the soundtrack over at thebigwet.com. We will continue to be talking about Umbral for the coming weeks as well, and you can absolutely expect a full review when that book comes out. And I really appreciate you taking time to talk about the new series with us. Now, for those that want to hear Anthony and I talk even more about the writing process and some of the other projects that he's worked on, following this interview in my other podcast, See Brian Write, which will be coming up on Wednesday as you listen to this, we will be talking all about process. So that's probably a good place to wrap up this part of the interview. And again, Anthony, I really appreciate your time and am so excited for this series.
Oh, thank you. No, it's my pleasure. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.
And I am back just to wrap things up really quickly. My thanks once again to Anthony Johnston for taking time out to talk about the new series Umbral. Check the show notes for this episode to get the links to the Tumblr as well as the pre-order form. And of course, stay tuned to Secret Identity as we will be talking about this series leading up to its launch as well. I did have a chance to read the first issue of it and it is amazing. And I can tell you right now, you cannot go wrong pre-ordering this one. So again, thanks to Anthony Johnston. If you want to hear us talk about more aspects of writing and different projects he's worked on, then head over to cbrianwright.com and you can catch the episode of my other podcast on Wednesday. That is going to do it for this episode of Secret Identity. So for Matthew, who is not joining me today because I did this interview over Skype, this is Brian LaHenry signing off. We will return you to your regular Secret Identity programming with our next episode.